listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr.
Good
Vicki
evening
Hunter.
And welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, February 28th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. I'm glad to be here. You know, it's the last Wednesday of February, and it's a leap year.
Oh, I'm telling you, yeah, it is. It is. We got an extra day tomorrow. So
yeah.
A friend of mine had put on Facebook, tomorrow is a leap year, so do whatever you want because the reminders aren't going to pop up for another 4 years.
That's right.
So, all right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. We're so happy to have you with us, and thanks to those catching up with us in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit explore science and spirituality. I got dog distracted. Excuse me. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. We'll begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal. 1 planet, 1 race, 1 ancestry, 1 destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So tonight, we're going to just kind of have a broad topic. Dr. Vicki, you and I were talking about what can we discuss this evening, and I thought, well, we can talk about how the material world and the spiritual world are kind of intertwined. And so my idea, but Dr. Vicki, that's your arena, so take it from there. You can just go for the next 30 to 40 minutes, and then we'll pull cards.
While you mute while the dogs bark.
No, they're just trying to dig under the desk right here. It's no problem.
I just think you're always brilliant coming up with ideas, Mark, because some days I'm in a writing project right now, so, you know, it's like an hour before the program, I say, oh, I got to go eat quick, get ready. So my brain was in some other world. But, I think it's a great place. You know, where does the material or physical world intersect with, and intertwined with the spiritual world. And I think it's a great topic. And where I especially begin with it is, for some people, does it exist at all, in that spiritual context? So it seemingly would appear that a lot of people are not living by some sense of spirituality that isn't under the guise of a religious belief. And so it's a belief system that motivates. And for any of you who get Dr. Kelly's, weekly bulletins and emails, there's another great article on belief systems. I suggest you give it a read. It's a good one. But that's the whole premise of IMHS and TFU, is about us keeping our minds open to belief systems. But I think that there is a spiritual energy at work in everyone, whether we're conscious of that or not.
I would agree.
I think that it gets kind of foggy when we get stuck in belief systems.
Oh, that was a pause for me to join in, but I was taking a drink of water.
And I was doing a little cough, and that's on live radio.
Okay. See, it's all the excitement of a live production.
Yeah, I know. Well, we haven't been doing this long enough, have we?
I'm telling you, we're newbies.
I know. So I think that that's something to consider. I think that, and I truly, with all my heart, believe that we are spiritual beings, you know, entered onto Earth into an embodiment to create us human beings. Yeah. Yes, we're learning. We're always learning something. And every day, every week, every month is some kind of learning in our, you know, in our own private lives and the world as a collective. However, it's, I believe that we're here to create and to continue creating and being imaginative and finding a progression on the earth. But it doesn't appear to be a progression unless you're materialistic, then you think everything's great. You know? And so where are we progressing to? Does it seem to be in a spiritual vein or, you know?
You said progressing or regressing?
Progression. I think we'd like to progress as a species and as humanity. I was sent a message from a dear old friend of mine I haven't talked to in years, and she's very distressed about how the homeless are being treated and some things back home, you know, where she lives are happening in the politics. And so, of course, I did some research, and I wrote back to her. I said, I had no idea about this in that area, but what comes to mind is Christians versus Christians. It's Christians who are wealthy versus Christians who are begging for money under the guise of doing good. and it's this collision, and of course, who's going to suffer, you know, as a result of that? Oh, more homeless people, you know. But it's how people pit themselves against each other all in the name of a spiritual belief.
Tribalism.
Sure, that entitlement, the privilege, the I don't want those homeless people here, but we need places for the homeless people and we need your money, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But it's going on everywhere.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I think, was it Trump? Somebody was talking about having these, you know, little communities of homeless and like little out of the way, kind of hidden offshoots of cities. And any Star Trek fan will know that. In Star Trek Deep Space Nine, there's a two-parter where they go back in time into the future of us, of 2024, you know, which was 30 years in the future back then. And they land in a city, you know, a little enclave of homeless in the city, and it leads to something called the Bell Riots, which leads to social progression because things got so bad. So, you know, we have that to look forward to this year. But I think, you know, when I think about spiritual progression, when I think about the evolution of us as a moral and spiritual species, I think it's about how we treat each other. I think it's about how we treat life. I think, you know, everything deserves to be treated with a modicum of dignity. You know, there is a bare minimum of dignity and kindness that is owed to all life forms. And I'm even going to apply that to people that would hunt. You know, it's a natural part of the world. It's not something that a lot of people like, you know, but it can be done with a minimization of pain, a minimization of suffering. Mm-hmm. That's one reason why, while I'm not a vegetarian, I'm very much against factory farming. I do, you know, eat fast food. I, you know, have all those guilty pleasures. But, you know, at times when I can, I try to go and look for things that I buy to be like, you know, that aren't factory farms, that are, you know, free range, that are grass fed cows and things like that. But, I work, you know, many of you know that I work with, you know, dogs a lot. I, do some fostering, and sometimes I'm even, you know, well, sometimes once I even fostered a dog that went to another family, and two times I fostered a dog that just stayed with me. But you know, I do things from here and there, and dogs have always been very important to me, and it's always really kind of killed me. I won't say callousness. I know people that work in shelters are good folks that are trying to do some right and try to make things better, but we have the resources to take care of, you know, these animals that are closest to us, dogs, cats, the like. They have, just as a materialist thing, they have been allies to humanity for millennia, and I think we owe it to them to take care of them. And, I think that we have the resources, we have the plenty, you know, that we could have no-kill shelters and things like that, where a dog has more than 7 days. And that, to me, would be a sign of spiritual evolution in humanity. So that's kind of where my thoughts go on it, too, and to show dignity and kindness to life. To
Well, and that's in the microcosm. In the macrocosm, I think about, you know, all the, you know, camps where millions of people are living, you know, without fresh water and food and, you know, rely on aid from other countries. And, you know, I mean, the list is long for the numbers of people starving to death on the planet. But it's a reflection of how we treat animals.
Well,
how
true.
We treat animals, how we treat other humans. And it's in our mindset, I think. Some people like have this, I don't know, it's a filter on their brains. At the same time, Michael, there is a reality that, you know, how many can you save?
Yeah.
And what gets me is that we want to save all the animals from Mexico when we can't take care of the ones in our own neighborhood. So, I mean, there has to be a reasoning, like some kind of sensibility that we impart in our actions. And but in our everyday life, you're doing your part in your way.
Right.
And the question we all have in our lives is, are we doing our part in our way? And not to let ourselves get contaminated by so many nasty things, because that's pretty easy to do. That gets us off track.
And we have more information at our fingertips than ever before.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to remember there are still starving people in the world. But as a percentage of total population, far, far, far fewer than ever before. There is suffering in the world still. That's hard to quantify. You can have suffering in first world nations as well, but things have gotten materially better for most of the species. You talk about the foreign aid that some nations rely on, but the very fact that foreign aid exists is a sign of evolution as a species. Whoop, getting some feedback here.
Well, I guess we have to understand, though, too, it's like how much that money that gets donated to these companies that give aid actually gets to where it's going.
Oh, yeah, and that's...
I think 10 cents on the dollar when you give to the Red Cross gets to where it's going.
Well, that's not all charities are created equal, right?
I know. But again, that's the system we've kind of created. We've created a very materialistic world where you have to pay a lot of rent money to be on the planet these days.
But but in a lot of ways, people are living materially better lives. And I know, it's a trade-off. We have struggles. Let's not forget the achievements that we've made, though. And let's build on them. Let's make it better. Let's build on it and keep going.
Well, I think that if we can, just even looking at the Dirty 30s or, you know, the Dust Bowl time and, you know, the 40s. And,
well,
you
how
know,
about
when
the 500 BC?
You know, the Great Depression even. This just that we have a greater number of people. Like our populations are greater. Statistically, it's probably about the same of the numbers of those who were impoverished and homeless to what there is now. It's just statistically, you know what I'm saying?
The physical numbers, while the percentages look good because there's so many more of us, the actual physical numbers are about the same?
Yeah, you know, I think that the physical numbers would just change according to the population.
No matter how you look at it, there are fewer people in poverty than there were 100 years ago or 50 years ago or even 30 years ago. That's a fact. It just is. Doesn't mean life is just rosy for everybody. People still struggle. That's a truth. But when I talk about this, I'm also talking about globally. So I'm not just talking about in, you know, Canada or America or the West. I'm talking about places like China, places like Africa, places like Asia in general. And, you know, there have been great strides. And of course, that's also come at a cost. You know, we can talk about the environmental impact of providing enough energy for all of these wondrous things to happen. And so are we going to be responsible with our energy production? Are we going to be responsible with our relationship with the natural world around us? And let's, you know, coming back to the topic, how is that going to develop? You know, we started out having the idea of talking about the nature of the material and the spiritual, and I took us way off track, but you know, you come back to it where if you there, you know, toxic is a material and a spiritual thing, right? We all know toxic people, and there are toxic events that happen in nature. I think that they can kind of become intertwined. I think that, you know, a set of behaviors can lead to both. And I think that kind of that's the connection.
Well, again, I think that there is somewhere inside of all of us a spiritual connection to something out there more greater. I really do. I just think of some people may have it suppressed.
Yeah.
And suppression is by ways of, you know, conditioning or intellectual formations or, you know, again, back to that belief system. How are you, you know, the neural pathways in your brain to what's your reality? But mm-hmm. I still think that there's a force in all of us that knows right from wrong, good from bad, and so on. But it's our inabilities, I think this is where it gets overshadowed, is our inabilities to foresee consequence because yeah. we live in such a reactionary, self-immediate gratifying kind of world. If we don't get a result right away, then, you know, it's not what we want, you see. But again, it's follow the money. If we want to go that way. So again, I think all of these things kind of shadow our sense of self in the, you know, what seems to be kind of chaos. But that spirit energy is there. I really think that in many ways, this is a year of reckoning for a lot of people.
And you know, it's funny that you say that because I think in 2024, there are going to be a record number of elections globally.
Oh, well, record number of elections and probably hurricanes, storms, floods, fires, and everything else to go with it. So I think that, look, this is the way human beings are, like it or not. We don't generally change until we're forced to change.
Yeah.
And I've often said about people, because I always believed when I was younger that everybody wants to become a better human being just by nature. And it's not true. And most people don't improve until they're forced. But, you know, some catastrophe, some crisis in their hands, or they lose everything. Then they get back to the, oh, what's really important in my life. So I think that in many ways we have to lose first before we realize to be grateful for what we have.
Because of the perspective it gives us?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have a very affluent town, you know, that gets burned out and then flooded out, and the people are just glad to be alive. So,
yeah.
Oh, wow, you know, somebody's going to help us getting food. And, you know, and so it goes on about appreciating those, you know, very basic things in life that very often we take for granted. And, you know, I had a talk with my daughter today at lunch when I saw her at a workplace, and she's having, she calls it an existential crisis right now about, you know, her life and what it looks like and what she wants to do. And if you only had 10 years to live, and where do you see yourself in 10 years? And we think we have a lot of time, but we really don't, you know, one of those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me, well, where do you see yourself in 10 years? Like, is there anything you want to do? And I said, you know, I think there's a driving force in us when we're younger, and then one day it changes. I don't know, you know. Sure. I don't know how life will be in 10 years. She goes, what if in 10 years you thought there was something great that you needed to do, but you needed another 10 years? I said, for God's sakes, I'll be nearly 90. I don't want to live that long. And she kind of looked at me. She said, well, that's another thing about mortality. So, again, this is our discussion. But that is something to think about. If everyone took a moment to ask themselves, if I had a limited amount of time, what would I like to accomplish in that limited amount of time? Mm-hmm. If I had 6 months to live, if I had just 10 years left to be on the planet, what would that be? And it maybe it doesn't really get fully absorbed into your consciousness to, you know, think of that as a reality, but it's a possibility.
I mean,
but the mere thought of it can give us a different perspective.
Absolutely. I mean, if I knew I had that time frame, I'd be catching up on a lot of shows and movies that I haven't gotten around to yet. Gee, I got so many things in my queue. Unwatched, it'd be tragic to leave this world without seeing them.
Well, it's like, what would we do? You know, it's maybe you're supposed to be a filmmaker, Michael. You know, that's a thing. So it's, I don't know, it's the learning of ourselves. And that's what I finally did say to my daughter is we all have a story. And to look at our own evolution, and I mean the individual's evolution, you know, and I gave her an example of my other daughter's life and the evolution of her spiritually at a soul level and what kind of woman she's made herself into. And then I said, maybe it's time to look at your own story. I mean,
you know,
I look at my story and I've done a lot of things. Maybe I don't have the financial successes that would say, oh, wow, she's really successful in the material world.
Right.
I've been really good at a lot of things, not great. But what determines great, unless it's accompanied with wealth, you see?
You know,
and so that's a measure. And we all tend to measure life by some form that may or may not be real.
You know, the funny thing is, you know, I made a crack about wanting to catch up on TV shows and stuff, but that's not that far from the truth. You know, I don't know if it was, I think it was kind of probably around when my mom died. You know, I was 18. It was the end of a long struggle of me thinking I could maybe, you know, find some fixer, you know, figure things out, do whatever. I don't know. I've been fighting it for a long time, and then she dies, and it's just gone. It's over. You know, what was that all about? What was the point of it all? Went through a big nihilism stage, and then I've always joked about the brighter side of nihilism because, you know, when you realize that in some ways it doesn't really matter, what do I want to do if I only had 10 years? I'd want to enjoy life. I'd want to spend time with family. I'd want to spend time with my dogs, with my animals. I'd want to, you know, sure, I'd like to explore life. I'd like to see things. I like to do things, sure. But the biggest thing is I want to enjoy life. I want to be at peace. I want to relish the simple things of getting up, playing with the dogs, you know, enjoying my comfortable life. And I would hold on to it as long as I could until it left. And I would appreciate it. And, you know, if I could travel, I would. If I couldn't, I would understand. And I would be thankful for the fact that I live in an era and I have the means to have my animals, to work with my rescues, to, you know, not have to worry about where my food's coming from. Well, you know, paycheck to paycheck can be tough sometimes, but you know what I mean. You get it. It's not like we're living in the ancient, or not even that long ago, where, you know, famine could strike and it would be devastating. Now, famine is when inflation goes up and it's just you can't eat as well. And that is something to appreciate. And I think it is not something that's permanent either. So I think we need to work to kind of keep it that way because, you know, things can go awry too, but I digress.
Well, Dr. Zach in the chat, he says, you mean there are other ways to measure success besides wealth and income? I know Zach well enough to know he's got his tongue in his cheek there. Zach, you know, I got to tell you, I consider you a great success story. And the success story to me is your determination, the power of your spirit, that no matter what you endure, no matter what you're suffering at the moment or facing in your life, you continue to learn. And I know Zach has called himself a procrastinator at times. He takes his time. But you've been a great teacher in your life. You impacted a lot of young people. You still continue to impact others, you know, by doing readings and counseling and so on. But you're continuing to learn. I see that as a huge success story. And understanding, you could have laid down and rolled over, you know, for all that you've been through.
Mm-hmm.
You could have just said, oh, you know, this is too much for me. You could have had a pity party. And I'm not saying you don't have days of that, because I think we all do.
Oh, absolutely we do.
But you didn't, Zach. And so This is what I mean by how we're navigating our way through, well, I got words for it, you know, quite the show. Yeah. And we're finding a way. And that's the determination of our spirit. Spirit keeps us alive. And spirit is the driving force toward hope and, you know, having some kind of faith and a curiosity of what's going to come tomorrow. You know, and to me, all that is a spiritual experience. We may not call it that. We might not think of it that way. But if you peel away all the layers, where does that come from? The drive to even stay alive for one more day. Where does it come from? It's in our soul. Mm-hmm. It's in our spirit. We want to do that. And then we want to improve things. Go ahead.
I've often argued, when you look at materialism versus something more, something metaphysical, something that, goes beyond what we can see, touch, and feel. You can look at something like evolution, and it's still debatable in a lot of circles, but I say, I don't discount it, but I say, what gives life that driving force? Why does life want to live? And that is kind of the key ingredient that lends itself to something beyond the mere physical.
I agree. I mean, if you're someone who is suffering immensely, no food, no home, on the streets, that's not a nice picture, everybody, let alone, the work that people go into collecting bottles to go to the bottle depot to buy a sandwich is, like, that's hard work. What is it in those folks, and thankfully I haven't had to do that in my life, I've been homeless, but I haven't had to beg for food or money, but when I think about what is the force that keeps that individual going, at some level, there's a spirit in there. So when I look at folks like that, I say, that's a strong spirit. Minus the addiction, minus all the other mental illness, there's a spirit in there that says, I'm going to keep going. Now, they create their own reality, each of us does. But it's that will to continue to survive. Otherwise, trust me, we'd have mass suicides. There's already enough suicides in the world. Otherwise, but we'd have a big mass suicide. Mm. It's like, oh, I'm suffering, I think I'm going to check out. There'd be a lot more of that. So it's that will to keep going. And that absolutely is a spiritual experience for me. And that's why every human being deserves, as you said earlier, Michael, respect and that dignity and, that
even the ones we don't like.
Even the ones you don't like, I mean, bless their hearts. It's like, if somebody tells me you're dead, I'm going to go, oh, well.
gosh.
it's because I guess, and I know that sounds cold, but it didn't mean anything to me. So, we only grieve what we love,
true.
But at a humanitarian level, I grieve for the whole planet. there's one of the part of the conversation I had with this individual who wrote me to me today is, like she had said, she's agonizing over how we've become so inhumane. And I said to her, I've agonized with that my whole life.
But
It's, oh, Michael, when you have a conscience and when you have a sense of humanity and you see anybody suffering, you automatically agonize.
Oh, of
even
course,
at some
undoubtedly.
Deep level, your spirit agonizes.
But this become so inhumane. Again, I know this is something I harp on a lot. And, I've been on a Mesopotamian history kick and I've been, reading about the Assyrians. And anybody that's even heard of them knows what brutal, horrible things they did. Even the Babylonians, all of these things, it is bad. Yes, it can be better, but it has been a lot worse.
Being human is brutal. There's so much brutality and that we have this, one side of our brain that really doesn't left to his own devices turns kind of ballistic. As we call it, Vikings call it the berserkers.
Yeah. I don't think it could get back to that too, but you know, we made some long and hard won gains to make the world a more peaceful place. There is, you know, again, if you look at archaeological records, as a rule, if you average out humanity in the globe, there is less violent death now than ever before.
Well, we still have a long way to go.
We do. We absolutely do. I will not disagree. I just don't want to lose sight of the gains. I don't want to add to the nihilism that it'll never get better. Because we are making gains. It is getting better.
I'm not. I don't have that kind of futility. I have what is. How do I say? I'm an optimistic pessimist.
Yeah.
That, you know, or pessimistic optimist. I'm not sure which is more appropriate. But it's the condition we create for ourselves. But I think on so many levels, we are awakening to ourselves.
I think so.
And looking at what humanity can be.
I think a lot of us are together.
I think it's just everybody's at a loss about how that structure would work because everybody's wanting to make their own structure and have, you know, be in control of how that structure is going to work. But if we think about basic things, every human being has a right to shelter, food, clothing, and to be taken care of. To some level. And that means us taking care of each other. Some people don't have skills that somebody else has. So we should all kind of like throw in our skills together and help each other out. As I told my daughter today, I said, you know, this weekend I ran a few errands and I was thinking, you know, that 50-year-old woman who's a cashier at the grocery store. I don't think she said when she was a girl, I want to be a cashier at Walmart when I grow up. Mm-hmm. I don't think she ever said that. Or, you know, the 30-year-old who's working at Starbucks. Mm-hmm. I don't think her dream was to work at Starbucks when she was 30. You know, so we look around at people in everyday life, people who are in the service industry in particular. Mm-hmm. But I don't think a guy... You know, 18 years old says, when I'm 45, I want to be selling used cars. I don't think that's ever.
Well, some people really love cars.
Yeah, they dream of cars, but.
No, I mean, you know, you're working at, I know people that genuinely enjoy working at dealerships and dealing with things like that, but I digress.
I think that we form our beliefs about what we should do based on the condition of the environment of the time. I mean, great promotion to, we need more tradespeople. And so for the next 5 years, that's all the schools promote. In the next 5 years, we need more medical people. But then everybody wants a doctor, lawyer, you know, accountant or something in the family. But nobody thinks that we're all just regular folks just trying to get through life.
Absolutely. And I think you are going this direction. Let me chime in if we're on the same page. I don't think what we do to make money necessarily defines us. You know, I work as an office manager, and you know, truth be told, I love my job. I love going to work. I love working with people. I get to help people, but that's not really what defines me. What defines me is the volunteer work I do. What defines me is my friends, my family, and what defines me is the work I get to do on this podcast with you. But I will tell you, as somebody that worked in the service industry, as somebody that worked as a manager at McDonald's once upon a time, as somebody who's worked with a lot of, you know, the working poor, there have been times where you're at, you know, like when I was like 22 and there, as a manager, their bus would show up at McDonald's and we'd get slammed. But while that time is going and we're doing a crap job in a service industry and a job nobody respects, we are making the funniest jokes with my friends and it is a great time. Even though it's busy, it's stressful. Nobody respects you, but you're having a great time and you make money to go out and do things, to see concerts, to do shows, to live, to enjoy things outside of that.
Yeah. I think that a great way to end this part of the conversation, Michael, is by what Dr. Zorin has said in the chat. He said, a friend recently told him. He rarely gets depressed in tough situations because he knows, quote, there is a reason why I am here, a task to fulfill, end quote. He says it helped me a lot lately.
That is good.
We all have good a advice. Task to fulfill. That's a awesome way to look at things. Now we're going to pull some cards. Right?
All right. We
I
have
know
gone.
There's some people sitting on the edge of their seats. I do want to give a shout out to Wendy.
Thank you.
Our card keeper. She's a little under the weather this week. And
back to Vicky B, and mind reader again.
Yeah, well, we're on the same page. And Wendy couldn't be with us, but she will be back next week. And she said she'll listen to the show in the archives. Yeah, so a big shout out to Wendy. And we're all sending you lots of energy to get better.
Absolutely. Sending lots of energy, sending positive, white light, love. You know, can't wait to see you back with us.
Yep,
and before we dive into the cards, also an announcement. Next week, we're going to have Dr. Rick Tleska joining us again for the Metaphysics of Gray Aliens, and Dr. Doug Kelly is going to be joining us as well. So that's going to be next week on March 6th.
Awesome.
And still a few other folks. I know a couple people have emailed in to join. I think I'd love to have Tabitha back. I haven't seen her here in the chat in a while. Hope she's doing well. But I think she had reached out. Hopefully we can get her on. So we have some cool stuff coming up.
Yep, I'm looking forward to that. It'll be exciting.
All right. So, we got some names popping in real fast. And, of course, I'm going to draw from our In Oracle cards from ICMH. I'm doing the easy work. I get to read out of a book. Dr. Vicky, you're going to be pulling tarot cards, and you have to do the intuiting. So,
well, let's start off with Jerry, shall we?
We shall. I have for you, Jerry, number 32, Sympathy and Empathy. Mercy is compassion in action and fulfills a kind act of paying it forward. Sympathy, or sensitivity for another's plight, and empathy, or relating to another's plight, each requires a need, compassion, and action to fulfill a soul's need to explore, investigate, and educate. Always extend the benefit of the doubt until there is no longer a reason to do so.
I got the Hermit for you, Jerry. That's in the major arcana of the tarot. I always see the Hermit as introspective, self-reflecting, you know, kind of the inner workings and perhaps looking for answers, even though we don't know the questions. Sympathy and empathy with the Hermit. Jerry, I'm going to say have some compassion for yourself. That's what I want to say. There's a fine line. I always say sympathy is kind of inert, empathy is an active, connection, but along with that goes compassion. So when you have compassion for yourself, understanding your humanity as your humanness, and that life is sometimes a slower process than we would like it to be, we can just go for the ride, and be in that moment saying, well, today's today, let's see what today brings. So I just want to share that with you, Jerry, that you're on a learning curve. Of course, we know you are, but you're going to get through this. It might just take a little longer than you had hoped or wanted it to. That's all.
I like it.
Okay, Jeff, we have.
And for you, I have number 28, Do No Harm, Do Right. Do no harm, do right is the most powerful principle to live by. Doing no harm includes words and actions to the self and others. Doing right means to also take positive action where there is a need without infringing on the free will or rights of others. Always strive for the highest good for all concerned, including yourself. Do no harm and do right establishes the foundation for all other principles.
Well, this is really interesting, Jeff, because I got the Justice card. Sometimes, do no harm, do right can be for the self. I want to say that this might be an inclination to want to sign a document, want to sign something. That's the picture I get in my head. And going against your intuition. So what I can offer you at this point is read the fine print before you sign anything. And if you're okay with the fine print or you negotiate that fine print, then go ahead. So it's just that moment of you know, pushing the pause button and saying there's still more here I need to see, so that you don't get yourself in a get hooped into something that you weren't aware of. I don't know if that's signing a lease, you know, a property or something. Just read the fine print, Jeff. So there
all
we go.
Right.
And we have Kevin next.
Kevin, I have number 5, law of control. Differences are inevitable. Diversity is desirable. The law of control says you cannot change or control others, but you can have a positive impact or influence. Control only that to which you are entitled to control. Do not give unsolicited advice. Respect that everyone has the same rights to self-creation and decisions. You can accept present circumstances as they are, lobby for change, or leave.
Interesting that you get the Fool here, Kevin. I like the Fool. It's the first card in the major arcana in the tarot. It's that leap forward. It's, you know, trusting yourself. The yin, like, there's equal and opposites to all symbols, right? The negative of that Fool is that you can crash and burn because you leap too far. You know, so know the details before you do. But it is that energy of forward movement, that action. So that law of control, you can't control things if you intuitively know you're going forward. As I told my daughter today, we may not know where we're going, but little steps get us there and show us the way. So that's what I want to say to you, is take those little steps. You don't need to control every little detail, even though you want to know what they are. You're just going to have some trust that, you know, you got to start somewhere. So all those little steps add up along the way. And then you'll see the picture. You will see the picture then.
All right.
We have Zoran next.
All right. For you, Zoran, I have number 24, truth. There are many ways to discover cosmic truth. It begins with knowing who you are and why you are who you are. This is your truth. Discovering cosmic truth involves further discovering the truths that are often concealed within a relationship or life situation. Yet, the only truths kept secret are those we will not see. This is a time of deep introspection to intuitively gauge the way ahead. This card may indicate that there is truth in something or in a direction.
Zoran, you know that Five of Diamonds is, in some ways it's a materialism is involved, but it's also about activity and motion and what people are doing. For instance, it's like you moving ahead and people tugging at your coat to say, no, you shouldn't change, or it's somebody else moving ahead and you feel like you're left in the dust. So it's that finding your own truth in this situation is also about who can't go with you on the ride. Now, not everybody in your circle has to have the same belief systems. So just keep that in mind as you're kind of understanding who you can and can't have conversations with, and at what level all your relationships are. And just allow them to breathe in that way. Even if people want to hold you back, just keep doing what you're doing. And everybody will find their place and understanding. I'm inclined to want to say, when we change, finding our truth, most people around us feel a threat of abandonment. Because if we change, they feel like they'll be left behind and left alone. I don't know why I want to say that to you, Zoran, but, you know, if it fits in some way, we can help other people feel comfortable by being consistent and letting them know we're changing it as we go, and that it nothing about them. Everything's still cool. So I hope that makes sense at some level. All right, we have Edward next.
All right. Oop, bumped the mic. And Edward, I have for you number 14, energy shift, a new chapter. Energy shifts are a natural result from increased awareness, knowledge, and new attitudes that naturally open new chapters in one's life. It's an excellent time to clarify your vision during this time of shifting energy. Reflect, gather your energy, breathe, and step forward with a renewed sense of direction. Out with the old and in with the new.
You know, when I draw the King of Spades, energy shift, new chapter, King of Spades. The first kind of correlation and impact it has on my mind here is not worrying so much about what other people think of you. That's what I want to say. Yeah, I think that a moment in time comes where when we're owning who we are, we don't need other people's approval anymore. Now, I know you're a confident guy, Edward. Maybe in some way you've still been working to please people in your circle. And again, I don't mean to trespass on something too personal here, but this is an internal sense of self-certainty, self-knowing. And when we do that, we relax. So it's this energy shift of you just relaxing into who you are and feeling safe with who you are. And maybe you felt that way for a while. I thought you did, but there is a shift here. But it's about you owning, like you being the boss of you in your own experiences in a brand new way. So let me say it to you that way.
So, I like it.
Interesting. I think we have Audra next.
Audra, always a pleasure. And for you, I have number 41, communication. The most important form of communication is with the higher self, reflecting on one's spiritual evolution. A good communicator both listens and speaks equally, interactively and with interest. A poor communicator either talks too much or listens too much. A lack of communication will kill any relationship, and this is the most effective method for ending an unhealthy relationship. Assertive communication is direct, honest, empathetic, and focuses on win-win. Communication, along with trust, are the two most important relationship traits.
Well, so interesting that the Eight of Hearts comes up, the Eight of Cups on that, Audra. You know, I always see the Eight of Hearts as somebody walking in the dark, just only having, you know, barely a light in front of them or the moon to guide them, and it's very intuitive. But when it's paired with communication, maybe you've been too cautious or too conscientious with your words. Sometimes we can hold back when they're needed, and everything can be done in a good way. Funny, I had to talk with my other daughter the other day, and she is a friend who's got a job offer that's a killer job offer. But the girl's thinking of not taking it because it requires so many changes. And my daughter said, well, I didn't say anything. And I said, maybe you need to, because she respects what you have to say. Maybe she needs you to validate that this is a really good thing for her and that she's too young to be too comfortable, you know, and that this is a real boost for her. And she said, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I should say something, because we try not to poke our nose in other people's business, you know. So there is a time, though, to speak up and be encouraging of other people, and sometimes to just, you know, say our piece. And maybe you're in a moment like that, Audra, where your voice and your words are needed. So, again, think about that. And if you think there's a situation here that you've been holding back on, well, maybe it's time, you know, because your opinion's valued.
Right. So, and I think
we have Bridget.
Yeah, I think that's by my count, the last card that we have this evening. And Bridget, for you, I have number 36, gratitude. Let's see. Gratitude is the joy one feels in the heart when the mind awakens to the gifts of life, no matter how seemingly small or insignificant. The truest essence of love lives within the feeling of gratitude, desiring a connection with all life, while giving freely without want for return. Gratitude is benevolence that wants to give forward. Take a compliment with graciousness and good manners when gratitude is extended.
I have the Nine of Diamonds for you, Bridget. You know, and the first sense I had when that card, when I looked at that card with the gratitude in that, I don't know if something's shaken your world a little bit or something's happened to somebody you love that's shaken your world a little bit, but it's, you find yourself in a kind of a sombering moment of feeling really grateful for where you are and what you have. And it's a reflective time. That Nine of Diamonds is always about satisfaction in home and family. And we know you're grateful. We know that you're a grateful individual and you give of yourself willingly to others. And you've devoted your life in service. It's just in this moment, that's a sense of you saying, whew, I am just so lucky, you know, having a moment like that. And again, oh, she just wrote in the chat, gratitude is something I've been trying to feel emotionally. Well, generally we get hit by some kind of external event, you know, something that I always call it a cosmic 2x4 or, you know, some other kind of realization and just feeling that sense of, no, I'm really grateful for what I have, you know, and you know, I've talked to people too about when we look at what we don't have, sometimes we have to look at what we do have, you know, as compared to, and I mean, because we're always comparing, and it's not lost on me what I have versus what so many others don't. And so I think that you're just having a moment, Bridget, and it's how you move forward now. It's just another part of you filled up. You know, well, she says she's trying to work on it. She is grateful for everything, but trying to manifest and working on it, nothing serious, just training. Yeah, I can see that, Bridget, and that's where we connected right away with that gratitude and the Nine of Diamonds. So good for you. Uh-huh. That's a really good affirmation, actually. So
I love it. All right. I think that's all the cards we have for this evening.
I am so looking forward to next week.
It's going
to
be a good one.
I wasn't here last time when Rick was on, and so I'm really looking forward to just maybe poking my nose in. Now, Dr. Kelly can handle it all fine by himself, but I love poking my nose in. Yeah. I'm asking a question.
I'm going to kick back. I think I'm going to be a producer like I used to be. I'm just going to watch the levels and like, oh, you guys are good. Oh, yeah. You know, Vicky, your mic level's a little too high or something like that. Yeah. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But
oh, you're a good producer, Michael. We all play our part, you know.
I'm listening to one of the dogs groan in the background. I don't know what their deal is. But yeah, very much looking forward to next week's show. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us tonight. Thank you, Dr. Vicky. It has been a wonderful discussion, as always. I couldn't do this without you, and I don't think anybody would want to do this, listen to me without you either, so I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Michael.
But any last thoughts before we sign off?
I'll kind of leave it at don't let them push you around out there, folks. You know,
good message.
We're all on our journey. We're all on our ride, doing the best we can. You know, stay true to yourself and, you know, let your spirit participate in who you are, how you live your life. That's all.
Well, I can't beat that. So, Well, it is that time of the evening. My dogs are groaning in the background, which means they know it's getting close to the hour. So,
yeah, there we go.
So, with that, I hope everybody can join us next week. I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing some names we haven't seen in a while. Hopefully we can see Wendy back with us. And, you know, even if we don't see you every week, know that you're in our thoughts. And, you know, until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.